Welcome to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later, where we research the response of our past and review their relevance for today. This is your host, Moshe Kurtz. Welcome to another episode of Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Today we are joined by Rabbi Elie Weissman, who is going to be talking about what we would call an argument between two old friends upon the nature of, you know, just casual topics like forced gittin and a concept we'll elaborate on in just a moment of Ein Shliach Lidvar Avera. It's a huge schuss to have Rabbi Weissman. Rabbi Weissman, of course, for those who don't know me personally, served as my mentor when I was a rabbinic intern. He serves as the rabbi of Young Israel of Plainview and coordinates the Judaic Studies Department for Yeshiva University High School for Girls. Rabbi Weissman holds a BA in English Literature from Yeshiva University and an MA in Biblical Studies from Bernard Revel Graduate School and Rabbinic Ordination from the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary. Rabbi Weissman was a Tikva Lincoln scholar and taught in many of their programs. He has published articles and reviews on an array of Jewish and historical topics that have been published in such journals as Tradition and weekly papers as well. It is a huge schuss to have you not only on a professional level, but also, of course, on a personal level. During much of my time at Young Israel Plainview, I came for Shabbos, and ironically, because I was doing a lot of the speaking, I didn't get to learn as much from you as I would have liked. So this is a great opportunity that I get to hear your Torah, which is I have a lot to learn from. Also, I should mention to Rabbi Weissman, in addition to his Judaic expertise, also has much of a love for Jewish history as well. That's something that we really like to get on the podcast, is not just the halachic element of a tshuva, which of course is important, but what is the story behind a given tshuva? And so we're going to be looking at a tshuva of the Noda B'Yehuda in Eben Ezer, Simon Ayin Hay. And Rabbi Weissman, I'm hoping you could just basically tell us what's the shaila, what's the scenario in the tshuva, and what was the personal appeal of why you chose this particular one?
Well, first, Poskim B'Kvod Achtanya, I should say how proud we are in Plainview, all of us, me in particular, to see our own Rav Moshe Kurtz grow into such an influential community leader and thought leader. And so thank you very much for having me on. I very, very much appreciate it. And I apologize in advance if I find myself calling you Moshe. It's out of kavod, not out of a lack of kavod. So I apologize in advance. The tshuva that the reason I got interested in it originally was because for the past, I think, 10 years now, I've been teaching the second parak of Kiddushin. And this question in particular that the Noda B'Yehuda deals with here, it very much relates to the topic. And I thought it was just interesting for my students to be able to really explore some of the issues behind it. Later on, I found out I also had a personal relationship with this tshuva as well, because the Noda B'Yehuda, or Rechezkel Landau, who we're dealing with here, his interlocutor for this tshuva is another Talmid Chacham, who also turns out to be my ancestor, and that is Rav Yitzchak HaLevi Horowitz. Just to give you a little bit of the background, Rav Yitzchak HaLevi Horowitz is a contemporary of the Noda B'Yehuda. Rav Itzala, or Rav Itzala Hamburger, as he was known later in his life, was his brother was married into the same family as the Noda B'Yehuda, which is why you'll see the Noda B'Yehuda often call him Chosni, my in-law. So they were distantly related, but as you'll see with the tshuva also, almost everybody in the story is related. And a number of times, the Noda B'Yehuda throughout his Shailos V'Tshuvos will quote Mechutani or She'er B'Sari, and he's often referring to Rav Itzala. Rav Itzala, interestingly enough, so after having a number of jobs in some small communities, Harchov, Glogau, and others, he ended up taking over a very prestigious position. He took over for Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz, the community of Altoona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek after Rav Yonasan passed away. And he did it, amazingly enough, with the approval of Rav Yaakov Emden. This job he took over In 1765, he was born in 1715. He took over the shop in 1765, unfortunately, he passed away on Vav Iyar in 1767. So it was a very brief period of time. And he also passed away in the middle of probably another issue, which hopefully you'll get to on this podcast eventually, which is the issue of the Kli Baget. He was actually someone who was very much sought out his opinion on this issue because he had been a Masader Gittin for many, many years, and therefore his opinion was valued. I heard from Rabbi Dr. J.J. Shafter, Shlita, he should live and be well, that actually some people credited Rav Yaakov Emden with Rav Itzler's death. Rav Itzler refused to put in Cherem the followers of Gionson Ibeshitz, and Rav Yaakov Emden had Taromis with him over that. People thought that for someone to die at the very young age of 52, under mysterious circumstances, so they thought maybe it had to do something with Rav Yaakov Emden's mystical powers.
But wouldn't that be like a little bit ironic if it was Rav Emden who was using the mystical powers? Wasn't that his whole debate with Rav Yonatan Ivshitz, was not using all these Kabbalistic things?
Well, you know what? I'm no expert on Kabbalistic powers, so I don't know how they work and who gets to use them. But it's interestingly enough, I heard this from my Shachter, is that the second rabbi also died at a young age, who took over Rav Yonatan Ivshitz, and they basically agreed not to hire another rabbi until after Rav Yaakov Emden had passed away. And considering how significant of a community it was for them not to have an overall leader was kind of interesting. But that's kind of the background to it. Rav Itzler was zocha to have 15 children. He had two wives. Unfortunately, his first wife died at a young age, but he did have 15 children and many, many great grandchildren and great, 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 great grandchildren, of which I count myself among them, and we're all Levium. That's part of it, and so that is why I'm very happy to really be discussing this tshuva on this day, to see really what was a Milchamta Shel Torah between two people who at least at one point in time had a good deal of respect for one another.
Wow, it's a really wild case. I mean, just you read the. Can you tell us a little bit about the Shiloh in the case? It's quite the scenario.
Yeah, so apparently it took place, although it's a little bit unclear, apparently it took place when Rav Itzler was the rabbi in Glogau. I apologize if I'm not pronouncing it correctly. But the story is that his nephew, or grandnephew, it's really unclear, was in a very rough relationship with his wife and wanted to give her a get, and she was refusing to take the get. And Rav Itzler's Beis Din, after discussion with a number of other Rabbanim, paskined that they could force her to take the get, circumventing, if you will, Cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom, which prohibits you from giving a get against someone's will. And the way the story goes is that they sent a Shaliach Beis Din, they sent a messenger from the rabbinic court to go give her the get, and the way the Noda Yehuda describes it is that this Shaliach Beis Din basically mugged her and forced the get into her pocket, ripping her clothing. It sounded really bad. The thing is that the Noda Yehuda is writing this tshuva almost 15 years after the get was given. It's unclear also, it seems like the woman involved may have been related to the Noda Yehuda as well, which again is another complicating factor, and the Noda Yehuda says, I wasn't going to get involved and question this get until I heard that the get was given via messenger, and now once I heard, again, almost 15 years later, that the get was given a messenger, I have to say that this, he believes, was not a properly given get, to the point where he says she is not divorced, and the husband's current wife, he needs to divorce her because the husband is married against another Cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom, married a second woman, and therefore he thinks that the entire institution should be undone. That is the question as it was put forward, and you could see even in the way the Noda Behuda describes the question, which way he's going in terms of Tzach as well.
Right, and so this is so interesting. He doesn't seem to, unless I missed this when I looked over the tshuva, he doesn't seem to give that full disclosure about his personal connection to the different parties. He makes it seem almost like this is just a shaila that came to my desk.
Well, he definitely does have an opinion about Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Aveira in general, and which he wants to get out there. I'm getting a lot of the information from another sefer, which is maybe we can lobby Musar Rav Kook to republish it, which is it's called Mishnah Talevi, which is the entire collection of the works of Rabbeinu Itzala of Hamburg. So you get a lot of that information there, but everyone is related to everyone in this Shaila. So,
wow. This is really wacky once you realize who, you know, that these aren't just anonymous people. And what's also, I guess, interesting here, what you're pointing out is that had it been the husband who forced the get into the hands of his wife, this wouldn't get off the ground. I mean, it would be a legitimate get, albeit it would break Cheirim to Rabbeinu Gershom. However,
correct.
Since there was a shliach, since he had someone giving the get on his behalf, then we could apply the principle of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, that if you appoint someone to do something on your behalf, but it is sinful, it would negate the shlichus. It would negate him serving at your behest, on your behalf, and therefore it's like the get wasn't given. So I guess what's interesting here is the Aveira, in theory, is the breaching of a cheirim of Rabbeinu Gershom.
Yeah.
And is that a real Aveira?
Right. So the Noda Behuda has two arguments, two main arguments that he's giving here, both of which are debatable. Argument number one is he's saying that, in general, the rule is, based on the Gemara in Kedushin in the second parak, that Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Aveira, that even though the institution of being able to appoint a messenger to do something for you, when it comes to appointing a messenger to do an Aveira for you, a sin for you, it doesn't work. So I can appoint an agent to give a get, because a get is essentially a mitzvah, but I can't appoint an agent to, let's say, kill someone for me, because that agent basically becomes someone who's acting on his own, right? That agent is now considered a free agent, if you will, no longer working for me. So the claim is that the Noda Behuda makes is that since by giving the get against her will, he's violating a prohibition, the shaliach is violating a prohibition, therefore the get is not chal, the get doesn't work, it's batel me'ilav, and it's as if she was never given the get. And he claims that that's in general the rule across the board, that any time you say Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Aveira, so the maisa, the action that takes place, is undone or never gets done, if you will.
Right. He says, Sha'guf ha'maisa eino kayem b'midi sha'maisa b'yishlichus, that it's as if the deed never even took place. Though what's interesting is he does present both sides. There's this dichotomy of how to view Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Aveira. Initially, toward the beginning of the tshuva, he says, Kevin Shiesh Khan Avera Chamur Lavor Al Chem Rabbeinu Gershom, Legarish Bal Karcha, since you're violating Chem Rabbeinu Gershom by coercing the get. In Kain, Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Aveira, like you said, that the entire act is batal mevotal, it's negated completely because Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Aveira. Then he says there's a few people who started claiming Shlo Amru Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Aveira El Shlo Yischaiv HaMishaleach. It's just a way of exempting the person who appoints the shliach, but it doesn't mean the action never took place.
Right. So Rav Itzala, in his response, if you read it, so he notes that that the Noda Behuda's argument is not new, but it was actually made by the Mishnah L'Melech. That's what Rav Itzala notes in his response to the Noda Behuda. And interestingly enough, the Noda Behuda goes off on him because of that. He says, "V'hinei mechutani ha'gaon bePesach dvarav katzav hay piska shaget bata mitam Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Aveira b'shem Mishnah L'Melech." And he says, "V'hinei yagati v'lo matzati davar zeh b'Mishnah L'Melech." He's like, "I don't know what Mishnah L'Melech you're talking about." So the truth is, if you look at the newer versions of the Noda Behuda, so they do point that that it must have been, you know, nis'ale mimeno in the heat of the moment. But it is actually a Mishnah Lamelech. But interestingly enough, the Noda Yehuda also does not want to give credit to the Mishnah Lamelech for this chiddush. He says, this is my chiddush. He's like, what, you don't think I'm capable of saying this chiddush that inshallah yasavar vera, the maitza is batel? So the Noda Yehuda really is very insistent on it, that it was his idea, but the truth is it is in the Mishnah Lamelech as well. For those of you who are looking for it, it's Hilchos Gneiva Perek Gimel Halacha Vav, and he mentions it again in Hilchos Rotzeach Perek Dalet. So, but the Noda Yehuda does make a strong case, including noting that Tosfos, at least one answer in Tosfos, seems to indicate that that at least some people hold that the shlichos would be batel. The argument against it is that the Gemara seems to have a lot of cases where an aveira is involved, and nevertheless the maisa is chal. For example, the Gemara discusses a kohen sending a Yisrael to marry a grusha for him. In such a situation, the implication of the Gemara is that the Kedushin is chal, that they're married. So if the Kedushin is chal, so then clearly, even though there's an Aveira involved, nevertheless the Maisa is not Bato. And again, if I may defend my ancestor, the Ksos HaChoshen, himself, says, the linear in Divrei Harav Morein V'Rabbeinu Harav Yitzhak HaLevi Zatzal. So the Ksos HaChoshen is a supporter of Rav Itzala's position. Also, meaning in that very Gemara Kedushin, the Gemara Kedushin says, Asr la'adam she'kadesh et bito ad kishiktana, right? Or Asr la'adam she'kadesh isha ad she'yirena, that a person is not allowed to marry his daughter off when she's a child, when she's below 12. And also a person shouldn't marry a woman until he's met her first. This is still good advice for today. But in both those cases, even though you're violating an isser, nevertheless, the assumption is that the Kedushin is chal. And so Rav Itzla, I think, makes a good claim that the Kedushin, or that the Gerushin, even if you say that he violated an Aveira, which again, it's not so clear that it's an Aveira, and we can talk about that also, which is the second assumption that the Noda Yehuda makes, about Chayrim of Rabbeinu Gershom. But even if you assume that there was an Aveira, there's definitely ample reason to believe that the Gershin is still Chal.
Right. So I was, I think it's like toward the end of the Tshuva, he basically reckons with this idea that you were mentioning, that this is perhaps analogous to Yisrael marrying a grusha, marrying a divorced woman for on behalf of the Kohen. But then he says that's not how Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom works. He says the Ladati Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom lo al habal lechurkai. It's not just vis-a-vis the man who's married to this woman. El shelo legarish isha bal karcha v'chal al habal v'al hashliyav al kol misha nitfal lezeh. Anyone who's involved in the process of forcing a get, it's not just imposed vis-a-vis the husband, but actually this is not akin to Yisrael. The shliach is also bound by Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, even though it's not actually his own wife.
Yeah, he's trying to avoid an interesting paradox here, or for those computer programs out here, a never-ending loop, which is if you say it only applies to the Baal, so then it would only apply to the shaliach if the shaliach is in the place of the Baal. But if the shlichus is batel, then he's not in place of the Baal, and then there's no Chayrim de Rabbeinu Gershom, and then there's no Aveira. Wow. So it's like this never-ending paradox. So he's trying to avoid that by saying that, no, this is a grand notion of upon the entire community. He's also, he's supporting himself, or he may be supporting with itself, with a tshuva of the Rashba, which is the Rashba, in Siman Tavkuf Tzadi Aleph, in his own Shuvos, the Rashba says that the question of Chayrim de Rabbeinu Gershom, he deals with it as a Safek de Oraisa, even though Rabbeinu Gershom is well after the Talmud even, but nevertheless we view the Chayrim as a type of de Oraisa, Atzeika deraita, because it's high, it's a chiyuv on the entire community, midin shvua, right? And therefore violating it is like violating a shvua, which is a prohibition deraita.
This reminds me of the, I think it generally gets attributed to the Chasam Sofer, that minhagim have a status of a neder midoraisa. And yeah. if that's the case, then right. So then it's a bona fide avera that we're reckoning with.
Yeah. I mean, again, it seems to me that it may be an overstatement, also because, again, I don't want to mess with the Nodeb Yehuda here. The Nodeb Yehuda is, his reputation precedes him, and I am, Zocha to read his tshuvos alone, but... Like I said, I got to defend my family here. Again, the very fact that there's a long history of circumventing Chayyim Rabbeinu Gershom for various needs would seem to indicate that it is not as d'oraisa as the Rashba wants to claim.
Right. There was one other consideration I just wanted to get your thoughts on in the tshuva. I wish I could give you a precise line in there, but you'll work with me. At the beginning of one of the paragraphs, at least in the version that I have, he reckons with another consideration. He says, "She'im lo yada hashliach sheyesh kan avera havashlichus betos v'nekar shlichus legamri." That if the shliach, maybe it's considered a get given betos, because had the shliach realized that he was in violation of Chayyim Rabbeinu Gershom, he would not have done it. And then he goes a step further, actually. He says, Hein mitzad habal. Likewise, vis-a-vis the Baal himself. Shagam habal tov asavar sheina over chim rabbeinu gershom. If also the Baal, the husband himself, thought that he wasn't violating it, v'hava get betos. V'av shabita habal kol modos, avla non sahadi, sh'neged das ha-torah lo haya osem. Betosa lo kibal and afshe. If the husband himself realized that he was contravening Chayyim Rabbeinu Gershom, he also wouldn't want to do something like that. So even the, this is amazing. Forget about the shliach. He's saying even the husband directly gives the get to the wife. It's given betos. It's given under false pretenses. And since it's not given willingly, if you will, even if the husband himself gave it and we knock out the middleman, it also might not be a valid get.
I don't know if I'm aware of not enough of reasonings like that to undo Gittin. it seems to me that again I feel bad here because I would never question the Nodeb Yehuda in another context. But I wonder whether that counts as the type of ta'us. Meaning a ta'us that I usually think about of a get the ta'us would be like, oh, I thought my wife was cheating on me and it turns out she wasn't, something like that. But here it's like, I thought this wasn't an avera and it turns out it was. What if I thought it was an avera and I still wanted to divorce her, would you still do that on Ansahade? And again, here you're assuming some of the knowledge of the people involved, and I would have to assume that a shaliach beis din knows at least what's involved here.
Right, and that's also again what's going back to the whole context of the tshuva. I don't even know. Did he even mention that it's a shaliach beis din? I don't even think in the tshuva himself he mentioned that the shaliach was authorized by the court to go about this whole entire procedure. It sounded almost just like a gang of guys got together and pulled this off.
I will open it for you 1 second.
Yeah.
I don't remember whether he says it's a shliach beis din or not. That is a good question.
Which might be part of how he's trying to subtly invalidate this entire thing.
Yeah.
Making it sound like it's a bunch of marauders who got together.
Yeah. So he does get a little bit hyperbolic here. He says, "Shatafsu bali mechamos laisha ba'emta."
Right, right. It sounds like a bunch of gangs.
Yeah. And he uses even a terminology from the Torah from rape. He says, "Sa'aka isha ba'emo shi'ala v'hi mitraseik l'kabel v'hishlicha ha'get mecheika." Right, that she didn't want to accept the get and she threw the get away. And not only that, but the get was torn as well. So,
Right, the get itself got torn. So this is like
right.
remarkable. He's like portraying the narrative completely differently. I know that's a popular thing nowadays to talk about
Yeah.
different narratives, but this is
Yeah.
mamish what we're seeing here. The Nobihu's
Yeah.
narrative is completely different than the one that the Ravitzela is presenting, which was
Correct.
documented and was authorized. Here, a bunch of marauders got together and pulled this off.
Correct. Correct. Not only that, but just as a historical point is this poor guy who was involved in this, the Megarish, and the poor woman also, he ended up, not only was he put in Cherem by Benot of Yehuda, who, again, this is, we're talking to Gadol Hador here, when he says you're in Cherem, you're actually in Cherem. He actually spent 3 months in jail by the government because of the Cherem, until what's it called? Who was it? Who got him out? Tell you in a second. For someone who's involved in Pidyon again, a bit of Inyani
What wasn't Rubashman?
Dyoma. It wasn't Rubashian. Who was it?
It seems like the Rav Itzla did not win out the day, you're saying.
No, I mean, I think in the end he did win out in the day because I think in the end, Rav Moshe Leib of Sasov. Was the one who was poed to him. I think halachically, the vast majority seemed to go like Rav Itzel's position. I don't know if at the time, if they made this guy divorce his current wife or not. Like, I don't know what they did in the end. I don't think we have that information. But in terms of pure Piskei Halacha, like I said, the Ksos HaChoshen was on its side, the Yismach Moshe. That's Rabbi Moshe Teitelbaum, Rav Chaim Eliezer Vax in Nishiyas Utshuvos Nefesh Chaya, Rabbi Yehuda Asad in his Yehuda Ya'aleh, Rabbi Moshe Halevi Pollack. I'm just getting the whole list here from the Mishnah Halevi of all those who were on his side on that one.
Did
And
I hear Pollock over there? Is that my in-law's side?
I guess it's possible. Anything's possible. Yeah, you can find out if they're descendants of Rav Moshe Halevi Pollack, the author of the Tikkun Moshe, or not. So it seems like Ravitzela had his allies, but also he didn't really live long enough to really experience what might have happened. Although the fact that they still went to Ravitzela, with help or to weigh in on the Kli V'Get would seem to indicate that his Piskei Halacha were still valued when it came to the realm of Gittin. So.
Wow. So this is a bit of a dangerous question, but nowadays, when push comes to shove, I'm sure our listeners are possibly aware that the man has the option of doing a Heter Meir Rabbanim, of getting all these different rabbis to sign on in order to circumvent this ban of Chaim de Rabbeinu Gershom. So it sounds almost like this is another method. Assuming you're saying that you get around the whole Ein Shliach Dvar Aveira. Has this method been used since then? Has any rabbis validated using this method since this major debate?
I know in Israel they won't use it where they have the force of the government behind you. But I do know Bate Din in America, mainstream Bate Din, for whatever that's worth, will sometimes use a get zikoy in along with a heter meir rabbanim. Meaning if you have a woman who's refusing to accept a get. But we know that she's dating other people and she's going out and she's living her life. In such a situation, what they'll do is not just do a Heter Meir Rabbanim, which again is something that's often abused, I would say, but they'll do a Get Zikoy, which is basically saying to her, or saying on her behalf, you know what? Rather than potentially cheating on your husband and violating a major isser in the Torah of Arayas, so instead, what we're going to do is we're going to be mezakeh, And zechiya is a type of shlichus, potentially. There's a little bit of debate about that. But if something is an objective good for the person, you can basically appoint yourself as a shaliach. So what they do is they give the get to someone who declares himself to being mezakeh on her behalf, and she becomes divorced in that way. And then they'll use the heter mei rabbanim also. But again, I think that's just in extreme cases where we know that the woman has already moved on with her life and is just really not interested in getting a get.
Right. So in terms of, so it sounds like we're using this concept of zach l'adam shelo b'fanav. It, you know, it's something that we use even all the time, just in not as high stakes cases. For instance, some time back, I was conducting, as we say here, or officiating a bas mitzvah ceremony. And, you know, you give a gift generally to the bar bas mitzvah kid on Shabbos, but you're not supposed to give a matana on Shabbos. You're supposed to give a gift. So one of the ways to deal with that is that I could take the gift and I could give it to someone else at the shul who will acquire it on the kid's behalf. Oh, the kid didn't appoint him. Like you're saying, zach l'adam shelo b'fanav, we can transfer ownership when it's in the person's interest. So you're saying for a woman who's continuing to date other people, she's probably halachically going to be violating znus, adultery. She's also going to be potentially having mamzerim. So this is important. This is for her own benefit, you're saying, to give her a get in that case. And then the heter mei rabbanim helps vis-a-vis the husband himself. Very good. So in our last few minutes, is there anything else that you want us to know about the tshuva, about the considerations, about Rav Itzala? And also, I try to be good. I'm not always good about this, but I try to ask guests where else we can learn from your Torah. Where else can we learn from your different ideas?
Where I would tell you this is that the Mishnah Halevi can be found at used Svarim stores around the world. It's certainly worth your time, particularly his Tshuvos. There's a lot of, as was popular in the 18th century, it's a lot of pilpul, but if you're willing to do the work through the pilpul, there's actually some rewarding Torah there that it's worthwhile hearing. And again, until this moment, the Noda Behuda thought very highly of Rav Itzala Levi Hamburger, and I would think, and others did as well, of a time period when Talmidei Chachamim were really on the rise. So he's definitely worth your time. And again, if you can get yourself your hands on the Mishnah Talevi, it would certainly be worth your time. And you can also find on Hebrew Books some of the older versions before the Masada Rav Kook did the nicer versions. You can find of his Tshuvos and his Divrei Torah, just to keep his name out there as someone important. In terms of where you can hear me, so you can find some of my shiurim on Wayu Torah, where I deal with actually this whole generation of Talmidei Chachamim, and you can hear some of the historical background of people, including the Noda Behuda, who, again, I would like to say I have an immense amount of respect for, even
Good
though
thing to
I
clarify
was
that.
I was taking the alternative position on this issue. Rabbi Yechezkel Landau was one of the great Gedolei Torah of our history, and I certainly value so much of his Torah and so much of what he has done for the Jewish people.
Wow. That's very good. And I think that's an important note to end on, which is in the end of the day, it really comes down to the Melchamta Shel Torah, that, you know, we have two different Gedolim going at it. And despite the personal elements that came out of it back in the good old days, in the end, we have these beautiful tshuvas, we have this beautiful Torah, and we got a really nice discussion out of that. So, yeah, Yashar Koach, yeah. Rabbi Weissman, and again, it's a true privilege that I get to hear from your Torah, from your Torah knowledge, your historical knowledge, and God willing, looking forward to learning together again soon.
Amen, amen. Have a great day.
Take care. Thank you for listening to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Please make sure to subscribe to get the latest updates. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate us and leave a review. Do you have a response to the response that you want to share on the show? Please send your letter to the editor to MitchellMKurtz@gmail.com. And God willing, we would love to consider your perspective to be shared on a future episode. This is Moshe Kurtz, and I look forward to reviewing more responses with you next time on Shoot First, Ask Questions Later.